America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. By honoring your career calling, you impact your family, your friends, and your community. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
You love podcasts. The stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.
Thank you to everyone who supports this show and all the shows in the Major Spoilers Podcast Network. If you are not already, you can become a Major Spoilers member by signing up at patreon.com/majorspoilers. Thank you so much in advance.
The Major Spoilers Podcast covers news, reviews, and of course, spoilers, and goes into details about the topics discussed. So if you haven't read, listened, or watched the items we talk about, you might want to come back later.
I'm Super Matthew.
I'm Ashley.
I'm Rodrigo.
And I'm Steven, and you're listening to the Major Spoilers Podcast, the podcast for pop culture and comic fans.
In this issue, Superman smashes a site in secret society, Yara Flor gets some disappointing news, Stranger Things meets Ravenloft, and we all get caught up in the draft. We're for the punching and the kicking and the leaping of the tall buildings, so expect lots of the Major Spoilers wonder to which you've become accustomed. Strike up the band, crush all your cans, spray paint the vegetables, and put her in neutral, because the Major Spoilers podcast somos las perdedoras y está en el aire.
Welcome to issue 914 of the Major Spoilers Podcast. Thank you so much for downloading and checking us out this week. We are going to be talking about Superman Smashes the Klan from DC Comics a little bit later in the show. But first, why don't we jump into some news?
Oh, I'm not scrolled up. The rumors. It's okay, because it's really exciting. So the shouting was appropriate, because the rumors that Yara Flor was headed to the CW, sadly, is just that, and I'm angry. According to Daylin Rodriguez, who has a fabulous name, who wrote the pilot script for the series, the CW has passed on the project. Boo! Wonder Girl was to be a 1-hour drama based on the DC character created by Joelle Jones, who's actually called Wonder Woman. But fear not, more Yara Flor is on the way in the upcoming pages of Infinite Frontier, which is coming to DC Comics soon. Steven, I'm angry.
I'm sorry that you're angry, but it's also not surprising because they're calling the series Wonder Girl. It's got somebody who is not Donna Troy.
Nor Cassie Sandsmark.
And nobody knows who Yara Flor is because literally, as I was trying to explain earlier this week, the reason why you haven't heard of Yara Flor is because DC just launched Future State last month. And you guys are reading the DC Infinite comic subscription, which is 6 months old. So there's no surprise that this didn't go anywhere.
They did the same thing with that with Aqualad with Young Justice. They had announced this comic and he was already in the Young Justice book.
Yeah.
So, yes, because Young Justice was supposed to premiere earlier and then Jeff Johns wanted the created by credits. So he shoved him into a comic that came out 2 months before the cartoon did.
Nice. Yikes. So what were you hoping, Ashley?
I mean, I was just hoping that the show was going to exist. The Arrowverse, in my opinion, has not been as exciting as a whole.
Preach
since
it.
Arrow went off the air. Now I am here for Black Lightning. I am here for Legends of Tomorrow. I am excited by some of the changes they brought to Batgirl. And because Yara Flor is literally brand new out the womb, there's a lot less baggage that comes with this character, and there's more possibility to carve her out a unique and special and powerful place in the Arrowverse. And also, the Arrowverse as a whole has been dancing around Themyscira and Wonder Woman and Amazonians for a long... We have literally seen Themyscira twice from a distance. So this just for me, I was really excited to finally hit on that because like Nightwing, it's something that's been teased for so freaking long. It would have been great to pay it off. And I know Yara Flores only appeared in two issues, but I talked about both of them on this podcast and I'm really enjoying what they're bringing. So I just think it's a bummer that they passed on it.
Here's my guess. Here's my guess. There's a better place for Warner Brothers to carve out a niche for Yara Flor.
Wonder Woman 3?
And that is, well, no, probably not. But it might be on the HBO Max streaming service. You know, they used to have that DC streaming service where they introduce things like Swamp Thing and Titans and some other stuff. What ended up happening with Swamp Thing? Yes, it only won a season, but then what happened to it?
People liked it, and now HBO is like, what are people's contracts looking like?
It is now on the CW, and people are loving it on the CW. So yes, they did cancel that sooner, but here's an opportunity for Warner Brothers to say, okay, let's take this show. Yes, still Berlanti and everybody doing their thing. Let's get it on HBO Max. Let's pump up those streaming numbers. And then a year or so later, we can sell it off to the CW so that they can run it as like they're doing with Swamp Thing. That's going to be my guess if they actually move forward with this in any way, shape, or form. Streaming first, broadcast second.
I wonder if the lack of established character and stories might have been a downside for CW TV, because everything they've put on has essentially drawn on lots and lots and lots of comic lore.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. It's just a thought.
All right. Let's talk about something else.
Okay.
Even though the pandemic kept most of us at home and stores closed, 2020 was a good year for Wizards of the Coast. According to the earnings report on Monday, total game sales for 2020 was $1.76 billion, up 15% from 2019. Magic the Gathering made up the biggest share of the company's sales, and along with Monopoly, represented $561.2 million of the fourth quarter alone. And it's been well known that both Magic and D&D had their best year ever.
Yeah.
Magic consistently has their best year ever. They've had like their best year ever every year for the past like 4 or 5 years. But this was definitely D&D's best year ever.
Yeah. Now, they didn't mention Dungeons and Dragons specifically in the earnings report as one of the big sellers. They did mention it as one of the things that Hasbro has is in their game catalog. What surprised me was to see Magic the Gathering, considering in 2020, all of those tournaments, all of those store things all had to be shut down. And so I'm wondering if a lot of this also came from Magic Arena.
I'm sure a lot of it did. So there's a few things. One, you can't stop nerds from buying Magic the Gathering.
Well, that's true. Although Rob was mighty sad this last year.
Yep. It's tough when part of what you like about Magic the Gathering is the social aspect.
Is the gathering part?
Yes. But Magic Arena continues to grow. And in fact, I'm an example of someone who got back into Magic in 2020 because I didn't have other stuff to do. And got into Magic Arena. Like, I had some friends, they wanted to get into Magic, and I was like, well, Magic Arena is the easiest way, and here I am, completely hooked again, just like clicking my mouse like I'm playing Warcraft.
I sat down and started watching a 3-hour game stream of somebody playing Magic Arena, and then about an hour into it, I was like, oh no, I'm not going down this alley of jumping into another card game that is requiring me to buy packs online. I quickly backed out of that game stream and shut it down. So, but good for Hasbro. I'm glad to see that this is going to propel them to new heights in 2021. You may have seen the Boba Fett teaser that we posted on the Major Spoilers Twitter feed yesterday, but now we know what Marvel and Disney are planning. It's called War of the Bounty Hunters. It's going to feature a work from Charles Soule and Luke Ross. It's going to focus on Boba Fett on a crime epic where he goes up against heavy hitters in the galaxy. It appears to take place after The Empire Strikes Back. Empire Strikes Back ended with him having Han Solo in carbonite. This series starts with him not having Han Solo in carbonite. Han, who's got the Han? Is it going to be Jabba the Hutt? Is it the Black Sun? Is it Darth Vader? Who knows? We're going to have to wait and find out when Star Wars The Bounty Hunter Alpha #1 arrives in May of 2021. And then that Bounty Hunter saga will spread throughout all of the Star Wars titles. So,
want to make me happy? Give Han Solo to Crime Lord Shizor. It's a deep cut for nine of you, and you're welcome. So, wrapping up the news, I never get to do this. Finally, this week, if you're a fan of the Marvel Champions card game, like I know I'm not, Fantasy Flight
Games... because you haven't played it. It's an awesome game.
Well, that's not the point.
Anyway, who's he going to play it with? You can't play games right now.
Actually, I don't know anybody.
Let's let Matthew finish, and then I will go gush on this game.
Then you'll just... Okay, so Fantasy Flight Games, the creator of this game, released the Quicksilver hero back at the start of this month. That's played by probably Evan Peters. but, you know, just in time for his appearances in the WandaVision show. And it's now getting its way into the hands of the gamers. We also know that the next hero to join will be the mighty Star-Lord, a.k.a. my friend Pete. Using the leadership aspect, players can find new leadership cards to build their decks. And since there are Guardians of the Galaxy synergy unlocks, I think we have a good idea who's going to be coming after Mr. Quill makes his appearance later on this year.
Yeah. Oh, man. Fantasy Flight Games. I have a lot of ups and downs with them. Sometimes I really love the stuff they put out. Sometimes I get really frustrated by the stuff they put out. But I have been very pleased with Marvel Champions. It's a semi-deck building game where you play one of the heroes of the Marvel Universe, and you have set cards that go with your hero, but then you can take on an aspect. You can take on a leadership aspect, a protector aspect. I forget what the other two are. It's red, green, blue, and yellow. And then you mix up some generic cards, and then you go up against the Red Skull. You go up against the Wrecking Crew. You go up against, you know, you name it. They have all these really cool villains. The cool thing is, Rodrigo, you most definitely can play Marvel Champions by yourself. It doesn't have a steep learning curve. There's a couple of really good videos online of people playing these. I think it's a pretty fun game. And you can go with a pre-built deck or you can build your own. But I'm kind of excited to see if they're going to do the entire Guardians of the Galaxy team or not. Ashley, they did already release Scarlet Witch. As previously, just like most recently, they did Ant-Man and the Wasp and Doctor Strange and Hulk. And of course, you've got a bunch of other Avengers in there as well. So I'm just talking about
which Ant-Man and which Wasp,
not the movie versions. It's whatever the current
Scott,
comic.
Him and Janet.
Scott and Janet. Yeah.
I don't think it's Scott and Janet. I think it's the,
It's definitely Scott. I don't know if it's Janet or if it's Hope on the Wasp, but it's definitely Scott in the Ant-Man role.
Yeah, maybe that's it. You would know. You've been playing that game like crazy.
Oh, yeah.
There,
yeah, I'm
Matthew.
A huge fan.
Yeah.
I love that Fantasy Flight Games.
Yeah. No, go check them out. I'm really excited to see what the cards are. Let me see. Where are the hero packs? The weird thing, the one thing I don't like about the Ant-Man, and I don't know if the Wasp does this. Yeah, the Wasp does this too. They have the card that basically is your regular size card, but then it opens up so that you can be giant man, you know? And so you got a double size card, but you don't really have a way to protect the card, right? You can't really sleeve it unless you're going to be putting it in and out. This is Scott Lang is the Ant-Man. And for the Wasp, which mine just came in the other day, so I haven't opened that one up yet. It is Nadia Van Dyne.
Ah, okay.
So there you go.
Nadia the all new hope. Wasp.
The all new Wasp.
Nadia means hope.
Is that what it means? I thought it was the S symbol on Superman's chest. Anyway, listeners, join the conversation about these stories and more over on our Discord server. You can join the Major Spoilers Discord server for free, or you can link your Patreon account to Discord and get access to even more features. And you can find out more about that at patreon.com/majorspoilers. If you're just dying to jump into the Discord server right now, look in the show notes, look in the link. And if you have your mobile device, just look at the show notes. You'll see the link to the Discord. Click on that. It should open up your Discord app and you're in, and you can get all sorts of welcomes and cat gifts galore. Find out more. Majorspoilers.com. All right. Let us
cat
do.
Cat gifts galore is my favorite Jane Fonda movie.
Oh, really? I thought that was the worst James Bond villain. Cat gifts galore.
That's two good jokes in one night, Stephen.
Matthew, what's going on? We had the Valentine's Day this past week. DC got in on a little bit of that action with DC's Love is a Battlefield number one. What's going on with that? Did Love finally strike?
No promises, no demands. Heartache to heartache. They stand in the DC universe. 80-page giant $9.99. DC's actually been doing these seasonal big anthology books, and I'm actually kind of a fan of them because it always gives you weird kind of off-brand takes. This issue starts with Christos Gage, who I basically know from X-Men and Avengers Academy, doing Batman and Catwoman. But rather than, you know, your standard issue Batman and Catwoman story, they've gone undercover at the wedding of Maxie Zeus. So it's a Catwoman story with her boyfriend or boy toy, Matches Malone, accompanying her. And it's all Matches, Batman's criminal alter ego, having to operate undercover, surrounded by all of his worst villains. And it ends with a really nice romantic moment. It even, you know, addresses the whole elephant in the room. Not the literal elephant. That's Mr. Elephant from the 60s TV show. But they talk about the wedding briefly, and they have a nice romantic moment, and even joke about how maybe they should have more dates as Matches, if you know what I mean. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. I'm less enamored of some of the other stories. There's a Wonder Woman story where she and Steve Trevor have a whole Defiant Ones moment where they're accidentally frozen together by the blue snowman. Not so much a fan of that, but I'm also not a fan of the Diana-Steve pairing, which probably helps. One of the best stories in the issue features the romantic pairing of Amanda Waller and Perry White. But as you go through the issue, you realize that this is just story after story, and so many of them are really cool stories that you're never going to get more of. So on the one hand, really cool stories, and on the other hand, that you'll never get more of. You know, we see Avery, the Flash from China, being in love with Kid Flash.
Avery Ho, we love!
I love Avery. Her costume's amazing. And she has a crush on Kid Flash. And of course, the pièce de résistance, perhaps my favorite of the stories in the last three or four of these, is this kind of almost an oral history of Poison Ivy and Harley Quinn's relationship. And it does not shy away from it being a relationship. And it ends with elderly Harley and elderly Ivy about to die, but Ivy reminding her that they can turn into plant versions of themselves. And even though they'll lose all their memories, they can have another life together. Making it just straight right out there in front of you. They are a couple. They are my one true pairing. And for that reason, 3.5 slices of meatloaf for Love is a Battlefield. It would help me to know if I stand in their way or if I'm the best thing they've had. But as Pat Benatar was once heard to say, yippee, yippee, ya, ya, da, da. Good book. I would recommend it.
All right, cool. Ashley, why don't you tell us what Jean Luan Yang is doing this week over at First Second?
Yeah, so I thought in companion to Superman Smashes the Clan, why not more Jean Yang? Because he's a genius. He literally got the MacArthur Genius Grant. He's a genius.
It's right there in his name.
Some governing body said so. I have no idea who gives that out. Probably somebody named MacArthur. I'm not American. American-born Chinese has been out for a number of years. This is a beautiful new printing from First Second. And something that I learned when I started to try and collect independent comics with a more critiqued eye, I actually learned from Matthew Peterson. And he said, if it says First Second on the cover, it's going to be good. And that's true. An American-born Chinese is very, very good. And it is a contemporary, both adaptation and mixing of a classic Chinese fairy tale, fable, myth, however you like to think about it. It stars a young Chinese-American boy. He's first generation. It's about his, you know, struggles and his stories being in America. It's a little more on the nose than the story we're going to talk about later, but that's definitely what's thematically tying it together. And he is visited by a offensive caricature named Uncle Pejorative. I can't say his name. I will not say his name, but it's a nasty name who represents all of the broad Asian and Asian American stereotypes. And so this figurative character comes up against a real boy. And then in dueling narratives, we see how our protagonist comes to terms with his identity as a young man and as an American. And it's really moving. I read this not too long after I had come to the States. I am a Caucasian person with no discernible accent, so my experience is a lot easier than a lot of people's, but the immigrant journey of this really touched me. And this is also one of the many graphic novels that Gene Yang draws himself. And there is something so deeply charming about his art style. I can't recommend enough, if you like his superhero work, to go and check out some of his indie stuff, some of his more autobiographical work. And I think American Born Chinese is a really good place to start. I also love that the title is ABC. And here's a fun story. I was speaking to him about this book, and he said that one of the number one questions that he gets asked at conventions is if he's going to sell a plushie of Uncle Pejorative, because he is sort of this cartoony, cutesy caricature. And he goes, I try to take it as a compliment because they like the book, but it hurts a little bit that they miss the point entirely.
Yeah.
So I encourage you, for a second, has done a really nice, it's their new soft cover. It was only in hardcover for a long time. Check out American Born Chinese. You'll be a smarter, better, more enlightened person for checking it out. And then go read the rest of his catalog. Work your way forward until you get to Superman Smashes the Clamp, which is also really, really good.
All right.
Spoilers.
Thank you for that, Ashley. Let's see. I'm trying to look and see if I've got a review copy sitting around here. It's weird because I type in American Born Chinese into my search engine, and it instantly comes up with the Superman Smashes the Clan piece that...
Because it's probably in his bio in that, right?
It probably is. So that's kind of cool.
I'm also pretty sure it's won a bunch of awards. So if you don't take my word for it, check it out.
I definitely want to see it. But I wanted to make sure that First Second hadn't sent us a review copy at some point over the last couple of years. And I just tucked it away in a folder somewhere. So there you go. All right. Rodrigo, Archie Comics. We don't get enough Archie Comics talk here at MajorSpoilers.com because a lot of the times they're just republishing old stuff. But that's not the case in Jumbo Comics Digest 317.
Actually, I don't know that it isn't the case.
Oh, really?
The last Jumbo Comics that I read very prominently said that they had a brand new story.
That's what I thought the solicitation with this one was when I put up the sneak peek today.
Okay.
I could have sworn it said a new Archie, it's done in the classic Archie style.
Yeah, it must be this. This must be this first one, but I feel like the last one made a much bigger deal of it. So Archie Digest, lots of Archie stuff. Like I've said before, it's lots of fun to look through and guess what time period this any given story was written. And you can usually tell by Archie's pants. That's like the most... the best way to tell, right? It's like, there's like three measurements, basically his ankles, his knees, and his waist. And depending on how, or, you know, like that sort of like mid thigh kind of situation. And depending on what's big and what's small, is what year you're in.
Right.
Looking through it, of course, it's all done in the Archie House style, so it's kind of impossible to be like, well, the art here is good and here is not so good because it's all pretty much identical. There are some old stories where like Betty and Veronica don't have that. What's that really prominent Archie artist?
Dan Parent is the latest one, probably. Yeah. Oh, now my brain has completely blanked.
So there's this look for Betty and Veronica where they have kind of like a little roundy nose.
Mm-hmm.
Prior to that, they looked like original Barbies. Know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it is weird. That's probably like the biggest change in art from any two stories. Like Archie has looked the same forever, right? And so has Jughead.
Mike DiCarlo is who I'm thinking of. Yeah.
Right. But sorry, Betty and Veronica. Like that's another way that you can tell, because old Betty and Veronica were very much drawn with like sort of like big almond shaped eyes and tiny, tiny noses before they kind of settled on that like more cartoony and really more close to like everybody else kind of style. So that's kind of what's fun about the Archie Digest. There's a great one where Archie finds a prize in a cereal box and he can't he doesn't know what it is, and he keeps asking everybody, and everybody guesses. And then there's like a little twist at the end about what it actually turned out to be. It's cute. One thing that I think about, and especially in this one, as I was flipping through, because again, I didn't think there was an original story, is I feel like Archie Comics was kind of putting out stuff like this for a very long time, kind of flying under the radar for most of us. And then Life with Archie came out, and that was a huge hit. And that led to Afterlife with Archie and the reboot of Sabrina and all that other stuff. And I wonder why they don't sort of like cross-pollinate that, why there are no why there isn't like a sneak preview or something, right? Why isn't there something done in the style of Afterlife with Archie or mm-hmm. Life with Archie or something? Granted, people who pick this up aren't going to want to see Jughead turn into a werewolf and eat his friends. But there's something there, right? There's something that potentially can be done, especially if they are soliciting new stories. It seems now that there's kind of a gulf, right, between the Archie stuff that's coming out in sort of like your standard like superhero style comic book books and your digests and things like that. So I don't know. I don't know what can be done there, but I was flipping through this and thinking like, there's these big titles that have been big sellers for Archie, and it's surprising that they're not trying to either move people. It's like everybody's already familiar with this type of Archie. Why not mm-hmm. point people who are picking this up to be like, hey, there's some brand new stuff from Archie Comics. Just a thought. I'll give it 3 slices of meatloaf. It's cute. It's fun. It's Archie.
Yeah, most definitely. Good times. With the Archie gang, I think it's the first story. As I was looking through the issue, I think it's the first story is the newest one.
I think you're right, and that story's cute. You do get to see the Archies jamming on stage, which is
mm-hmm.
nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's the Jughead that kind of gives it away. It kind of looks like the Jughead from the Riverdale show.
Oh, new sexy yeah. Jughead.
Yeah. That's actually how you can tell if it's a modern
Zach
Archie
and
story.
Or Cody.
Yeah,
he's got no pants on.
Yeah.
So it's big flare pants 70s, big mom jeans 90s, no pants modern Riverdale.
There you go. Yeah, all right. This week I picked up Stranger Things D&D crossover number 4. Many of you may remember that I reviewed Stranger Things D&D crossover number 1, and I said, what's the point of this series? I don't understand what they're doing here in this first issue, because it's all about, hey, did you guys know that there's this Dungeons & Dragons game that you can play? Here you go. Go check it out. And I just thought it was the weirdest sales pitch ever to incorporate in into a comic book since the time that Spider-Man and the Kool-Aid Man teamed up to take down the Scorpion back in 78. But anyway, I haven't read issues 2 and 3, but I did read issue 4, the final issue in the series, and now it kind of makes sense. The whole point of Dungeons & Dragons being part of the Stranger Things storyline is not that, oh, let's plug this game and talk about the game. It's, look how this game has shaped this group of friends and has helped them through difficult times. Now, the very first issue took place before the first season of Stranger Things. This issue takes place right in between the last episode of Stranger Things, where all the crap went down, and then the epilogue where Will is moving away. So this takes place right before Will moves away, and they're going in and having one last fight, one last campaign together on the last day. And they've got new friends that they've brought along to play in the D&D adventures. And of course, it's, you know, big and epic, and Will gets to GM the game instead of play in the game. And it's, you know, it's bitter and it's sweet, and it's basically a big goodbye. And then at the end, Will is going to basically toss away his Dungeons and Dragons books. And everyone's like, well, why would you throw them away? He's like, well, I figure if I ever play Dungeons and Dragons again, it'll be when I come back to visit you guys, and you guys will already have the books. And they're like, no, how about passing along the magic to somebody else? Why don't you donate the books instead of throwing them away so other people can enjoy the Dungeons and the Dragons? So I kind of see, you know, kind of this whole thing about how Dungeons and Dragons is a game that builds lifelong friends. And look how it's created this solid friendship among all of the kids in the Stranger Things universe. Still kind of feels a little bit like a heavy-handed sales pitch, but it's $3.99. So it's not, you know, it's not super expensive. And if you are a huge fan of Dungeons & Dragons, and if you really love Stranger Things and want to see how those two mesh together, and you don't mind a little bit of a sales pitch, then, you know, I think that there is a charming little story to be told inside these pages. It still sits a little weird with me just because of the sales pitchy nature of it, but I get what they're trying to say. I'm giving this 3.5 slices of meatloaf out of 5. It's not the worst thing that I have read this week.
It's hard to think of like something else where the pitch for the thing is like there's this product and the characters use this product and that's somehow like a plus, like mm-hmm. other people who use this product are going to want to look at this.
Yeah.
Like I can't think of anything else except maybe like the Talkboy recorder from like Home Alone 2. Like that's the last time that I felt like this movie is enhanced by this product placement.
Yeah. Well,
there was Superman meets the Quick Bunny. I mean,
so there
I wanted Quick after that.
Yeah. You know, Jodie Houser has been writing a lot of the Stranger Things stuff, so she brings that to the table. Jim Zub has been doing all the D&D stuff, so he brings, you know, that part to this tale. So the two of them working together, I think, works well. Plus, apparently, I didn't look to see if in my copy there is one of the characters, you know, the Stranger Things characters that they created for Dungeons & Dragons. I was listening to Jim Zub in an interview where he's like, oh, yeah, I had to roll up all the characters for the comic book so that people could, if they wanted to play Will's character in Dungeons & Dragons, I had to roll that up and figure it up using the original source material, etc. So there's that. I mean, it's fine. It's fine. The weird, I think the art is a little weird. Diego Galindo does the art. I think it's a little weird because it's like, what's that cartoon show you like, Matthew? Archer?
Mm-hmm.
So imagine Archer without the heavy, thick lines, but looking like real people.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not saying that they just found frames from Stranger Things and traced people on there, but it kind of looks that way. And it's very flat because they're using very flat colors and not a whole lot of shading.
Right.
So it's really weird looking. It's like an Archer, you know, I don't know how to describe the art. It's not like the Fumiyami comics, but it kind of felt that like that.
Right. Fumetti.
Fumetti. That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm thinking of. Fumetti. So yeah, I'm just insulted a bunch of people by saying Fumiyami. I'm sure that doesn't mean something.
Well, I know
something
I'm
nice.
Offended.
Yes.
Hi,
I'm sure
hi,
you are.
Fumiyami Yumi.
So 3.5 slices of meatloaf. It's okay. And I think if you're heavy into both of those properties, you probably already bought the comic and are saying, but Steven, I loved it. Good for you. In fact, I've even put a link in the show notes if you would like to go and buy your own copy over at comixology.com. So there. Let's see. What else is going on over at Major Spoilers this week? You're getting a new Legion Clubhouse episode. We are looking at Jim Starlin. I don't think this is his first tale of Legion of Superheroes, but it certainly is a really good one.
Very first tale of the Legion of Superheroes.
Well, then, see, you've got that going for you this week coming up on the Legion Clubhouse. Dan is into top five this week to talk about the top five games to play with a deck of cards. Wayne did a fascinating interview with Mike Kennedy and Caleb Thusat, I think is how you say that last name, over at Critical Hit. Big 313 shows up and caused all sorts of trouble. And then, of course, don't forget Geek History Lesson, where this week they did a deep dive into the history of Ashley's favorite character, Ahsoka Tano.
I love her.
So,
and one other thing that Steven may not know about, he is the person who inspired this week's 10 things.
Are you sure?
Because yeah.
I have nothing to do with tulpas.
No, you're the one who inspired it, man. Stay with me.
Okay. All right. You can find out more about that over at majorspoilers.com. But in the meantime, if you want to listen to all the Major Spoilers podcasts, and I mean, you really do want to listen to all the Major Spoilers podcasts, then just do a search in your podcast search engine for Major Spoilers with the plus sign, and you'll find all of the shows right there. You think I'm joking? I seriously changed.
I don't think you're joking. I think it's hilarious that you have committed to this bit.
I have changed the entire name of the stream to Major Spoilers Plus, and you can find it. And listen to all of our shows. If you want even more shows, and, you know, Flashback is coming back very, very soon, like in a couple of weeks, I want to say.
Oh, God.
I know, right? The Flashback podcast will come. It is an exclusive show for our patrons over at patreon.com/majorspoilers at the silver level and higher. Also at the silver level and higher, you get access to the GM Roundtable, which is a show that we do once a month live in our Discord server for our patrons. So this is one of the reasons why you want to link your Discord and your Patreon accounts together. But someone sent out a tweet this week, Rodrigo, saying that, hey, I just ran my first Fate game and I owe all of the success that I had to listening to the advice coming from the GM Roundtable.
Oh, that's great.
So there you go. You want to go and check that out. You can only get it over at patreon.com/majorspoilers. All right, this week, let us jump into not only one of the most interesting Superman tales that you will read this year, or maybe last year if you've already read it, but one of the more important elements of Superman history, especially when it comes to the Superman radio drama serial, which was ran from like 1941 to 51 or something like that. This is based on the Clan of the Fiery Cross, which ran in 1946. This is a fairly good adaptation of that story, but, you know, Gene Yang expands upon that in this story. In the Superman and the Clan of the Fiery Cross, there is a Mr. Lee who moves to town, and his son, Tommy, wants to join the baseball team, and he is a better pitcher than the other kid, and he gets kicked off the team, and he goes and tell his dad, turns out his dad is part of the Clan, and the Clan get involved trying to chase the Lee family out of town, and Superman gets involved. There's some kidnappings. There is a very, I think, telling reveal at some point in the original radio drama where the father of the baseball kid is going to meet the I forget what the name is in the radio drama, but essentially the Grand Wizard.
They call him the Grand Scorpion in the comics.
Same. Yeah, the Grand Scorpion. And he's like, yes, we are going to go and do all this stuff. And the Grand Wizard is like, what are you doing? Why are you trying to bring the police and the Superman down on us? This is one of our biggest membership drives right now. Do you realize that every piece of literature that we send out, we charge our members for, and every cape and every hood we charge our members for, and all this is a huge money making opportunity for us, and you're screwing us over. And it really just, in that one episode of the Clan of the Fiery Cross, it really just shows that the Clan doesn't care about anybody's ideals except for making money off of hatred. And I think that they kind of, that scene does play out in this comic as well. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of other stuff that's added in this, Ashley, that is not found in the audio drama. Now, I don't know, how many of you have listened to the audio drama?
I have.
You have, Ashley? Matthew?
I'm almost certain I have, but it's been years. I used to listen to radio dramas for a living, so
mm-hmm.
I've never heard it.
I would go to the archive.org where they have all of these classic old-time radio dramas, including the Superman shows, all of them. And at one point, before the copyright hounds started nipping at my heels, before Finally Friday, this is about a year, year and a half ago, I was running all of those episodes for the 15 minutes before the show started so people could listen to that. But I would definitely recommend, if you can track it down, to listen to it. I would say that there are still some, even though this is tackling the Klan and tackling racism in America, there's still a lot of really uncomfortable bits in the radio drama that don't sit well today. And I've talked about them before. One of them is Perry Grant has a young Filipino houseboy, and I forget what his name is, like Pepe or something like that. And he has a very heavy accent in the moments that he's in the piece. So you'd be aware of there's some of those moments in the piece. But overall, the 15 or so episodes tell a very powerful story. But Ashley, go ahead. Poco, that's it. Ashley, what is the what are some of the big changes that we see in the comic book versus the radio drama?
Of the women are allowed to speak and be dynamic, compelling characters.
What? Well, we do get the addition of Roberta. Now, Roberta is a new character in this piece.
She's perfect. I want her to be in the main continuity and to be John Kent's girlfriend.
We also get, there's a little bit, and I don't remember, there was a series of the Superman tales that ran, I want to say, like four story arcs before Clan of the Fiery Cross that had something to do with an atomic smasher guy. I don't know if the main villain that starts out in the beginning of this story was based on that or not.
He's Atom Man from the 1950 serial, the first Kirk Allen serial.
Okay, so this would be after Clan of Fiery Cross then.
Right, but there's actually reference in this story to him being a prototype Atom Man, because if you actually watch that movie, Atom Man in that movie is Lex Luthor.
Okay.
He's based on that character from the film.
So also something that was introduced in the radio drama, but not not during the Clan of the Fiery Cross, was Kryptonite. So a lot of people are not aware that Kryptonite was first introduced in the radio drama because Tony the Tiger had to have a vacation day. And so they spent an entire week where they just had somebody else going, because Superman was had Kryptonite tied to him and was thrown down in a well. And so that's how they got Tony the Tiger to get his vacation and also still do the voice of Superman.
Bud Collier,
exactly. Yeah. Tony the Tiger. But Kryptonite.
Tony the Tiger was Thurl Ravenscroft, but I'm with you. Go ahead.
But Kryptonite plays a big role in this, as does, I think, Rodrigo, a big important tie, the fact that Superman is also an outsider trying to live among regular people.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's something that that becomes relevant like more and less depending on who's writing him and when and who's looking at Superman's history. But I mean, there's no two ways about it, right? Superman comes from a different planet. So in a lot of ways, he's an outsider. He has different abilities than everybody else. So he's an outsider. He hides his secret identity, something that most people don't do. There's lots of things that separate Superman from, quote unquote, the rest of us. So he has these feelings of alienation, which, you know, if you are someone who comes from a different country, someone who doesn't look the way that the majority of people look in a particular country, you're going to feel as well. So there's a lot of common ground here between Superman and the Lee family.
Yeah, most definitely. And I'm wondering, and I don't think they spell it out in the book, but I think that it's implied that Superman is having a radical reaction because he starts to see himself as this kind of slimy green alien and visions of his parents as slimy green aliens. And I can't help but wonder if that is his reaction to the fact that he looks like an average white person and the Lee family, you know, obviously are Asian and don't fit in with common America. And if that is Superman's reaction to, like, oh my gosh, I really am an outsider and this is how I'm viewing myself.
It's Superman's internalized racism.
Yeah, I think it is, because if you really look at this, and something else that this story does that I'm not sure anyone has done before, and if they have, I don't know about it. Inspector Henderson, who was a regular character on the radio program, is a black man. He's a person of color.
Well, because over on Black Lightning, he's played by Damon Gupton.
There you go. But Inspector Henderson comes into this story and kind of gives it a different angle in that, you know, he's that authority figure, but you also get that moment of, I feel like the seeing yourself as an alien is, at least in my read, exactly that, Stephen. It's Superman kind of coming to terms with the fact that he's not just a regular guy. He may be able to pass, but he really is very different. He's more different than either the Lees or Inspector Henderson. And he's trying to come to terms with that. And for a while, I thought it was Red Kryptonite, because Red Kryptonite has weird psychological effects. Yeah. But yeah, as you go through this where you're like, hey, look, it's Jor-El and he's a bug-eyed monster from the 50s.
You make them seem like they're terrifying. I thought they were like really elegant and like nicely designed, like, 50s aliens.
Oh, no, they're not scary.
Cool, yeah. But that's not fun for Superman, right? It's like the character design in this is very good and very appealing, but to Superman, it's a scary moment, even though I literally wish that Kryptonians did look this way.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do too. But you also look at that and you're like, you know, isn't that basically just the way the Martian Manhunter looks?
That's true.
Yeah. The art in this is by an artist called Guri Hiru.
Guri Hiru is actually two artists.
Oh, two artists. All I got to say is the art in this is just fantastic.
Just make this a movie already.
I know. I don't know.
Yeah.
They haven't announced. I would be I would not be surprised if this is one of the future animated movies that Warner Brothers puts out. Mm-hmm. It would be irresponsible and foolhardy to leave money on the table with, as good as this story is, to be absolutely also able to play up on the fact that this has its roots in classic Superman lore, in the radio show, as well as trying to tell, in this case, the Asian American experience with the Lee family trying to fit in Metropolis. It would be a perfect, you know, no brainer for Warner Brothers to do it. And if they did it in this style, even better.
Yeah,
I mean, Warner Brothers will screw that part up.
If that Jeff Loeb run of Superman Batman is worth a movie, this story is absolutely worth a movie. Gurihiro is actually Chifuyu Sasaki and Naoka Kawano, who are two Japanese artists who work together, kind of like, I know you've heard of Clamp, which is a group of
Clamp
artists. Yeah. But I also think that both the members of Gurihiro are female, which is kind of interesting as well. I really appreciate, you know, seeing this art and going, man, that is one sexy looking Superman. And I'm not necessarily a person who's looking for a sexy Superman, but I'll be darned if that isn't one. He's a very fine, you know, chunk of man. And that's really nice to see in a story where mostly in comics, you get that male gaze.
Mm-hmm.
There's a little bit here of, I won't say female gaze, because first of all, that's not a thing. And also that implies something kind of, you know, vulgar. But this is a very, very manly block-like Superman. And I really appreciate how it evokes the work of, you know, your actual 50,000-year-old Joe Shuster comics, but also makes it all feel really, really modern. And the shield is the actual 1946 black-back shield.
Yeah. I mean, well, in fact, there's a lot of stuff that's retro in here, like Superman running, instead of flying, he runs on the telephone wires or the electric wires.
I love that detail.
So he doesn't mess up traffic or anything, which I think was a thing for a while in the comics, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, the thing about it is, as much as this book gets a lot of great things right of 46, by 46, Superman was flying in the comics, but yes. In those early stories, the leaping and the running across the airline things was nice. And it also becomes, you know, he stopped doing that when it became the gimmick of another hero, the Airwave.
Mm.
But you would see Superman running and leaping, literally leaping over the tall buildings. But another strong influence on this story that I love are the Fleischer cartoons of 42 and 43.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very much an inspiration here. The one thing that is a little bit different than the radio drama is Jimmy Olsen's character is downplayed quite a bit in the book, where he is a front and center character in the radio drama, because this was an afternoon thing for kids to listen to. And so Jimmy Olsen was that kid, you know, sidekick kind of view into the Superman's world. But I see here he's downplayed quite a bit in this book.
There's less need in this story aspect for that cabbage head.
Well, and I also think that the reason why we can downplay Jimmy Olsen is because we have Roberta stepping up to basically fill that role.
Yes. Actually has a really strong, and, you know, we see a lot more of Lois here, just front and center, Lois being kind of a force of nature. But it does end with that wonderful moment where Roberta, and I can't remember what her Chinese name is. Yeah. Something like that. But that's what she calls herself at the end when she's, you know, finally, I'm a cub reporter for the Daily Planet. And she
was Lanshin.
Lanshin. I love that. I think that's really nice. And, you know, I had a weird discussion this weekend with my kid about anglicization and, you know, choosing names and renaming things. And she's like, why in the world would we have ever done that? And the only answer I could come up with was ethnocentric nonsense. And she's like, yeah, that tracks. But I love the fact that she is told, you know, we're going to take the new name, you have a new name, but she chooses to keep the one that she had. And at the end, she, you know, takes control of her identity and has her own name, what she wants it to be. And I love that ending, even if it means not as much, you know, Jimmy Olsen.
I'm fine with, you know, less Jimmy Olsen. I mean, he's kind of a...
Jimmy's a great character, but...
He's a good character in the radio drama. He's kind of just the, Superman, what are we going to do now? And it's just I could do less with that.
What's nice about this Jimmy Olsen is that he's like an elder statesman among mm-hmm. the kids.
Yes, and that's how he comes off in the story.
Yes, as a ripe 15 and a half year old, I've been around the block a few times, and I've even met Superman once or twice, so...
Yep.
And it's like, he's like Superman and probably Lois's and Clark's sort of work ethic and morality has like clearly really rubbed off on Jimmy, right? Jimmy's always out to do the right thing. And he serves as kind of that point. It's like when the kids are like, should we do something about it? Like Jimmy's like, yes, we should do something about this. Everybody come on.
Yeah. So what are some things that you guys didn't like about this book? Or is there anything to not like about this book, Matthew?
There is a scene that really bugged me with young Clark flipping out and going all Brightburn with his heat vision. But it also plays well within the story because it plays into, you know, Superman feeling alien, feeling other, and feeling othered by the people around him. And so... I can accept it in this, especially when, you know, you play it against the Alien Tales story with the bug-eyed alien shooting laser beams from his eyes. But I always feel like anytime you give me Rage Superman with the glowing red eyes, I kind of go, eh. But I think Yang and Gurihiro handle it really, really well, and it fits perfectly into what they're doing. But I think that's probably my biggest complaint about this book. I feel like it's hard to really tear this apart because it's so well crafted and so well researched.
Uh-huh. I kind of wanted the bad guys to double down on their badness because they really
so Superman could punch them.
Yeah, I mean, in the radio drama, they really go off and say some, you know, harsh things that are not. And I think it's probably appropriate for them not to say, and the phrases that are used not to say in the comic book. But there's only one scene of them. And again, trust me, I don't want to see burning crosses, but there's the one scene where they're burning the cross. But the Clan of the Fiery Cross, one of their big things was when they were scaring the entire town, they were burning a giant cross on the hillside. And that's why everybody wound up in the river and everything. Here, of course, they burn it onto the Daily Planet. But I just kind of wanted them to do some more bad things. They're just not coming off bad enough, I guess, is my big disappointment. But otherwise, this book is really perfect. I think it's really, really good, really solid. Rodrigo, do you have some things that you didn't care about this book?
I mean, it's really good from start to finish. I think there's some parts that like just kind of weirdly drag.
Mm. Well, hey, surprise, the radio drama had to go on like 15 or so episodes, and there was like two of them where they're just like, I'm going to fly around and see if I can find young Tommy and Perry again.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what it is. Like, there are just times when we're just like checking in on characters where like the character, like a new character or a character that has just come into the conversation needs to be filled in on about what's happening. But it's very minor and it's stuff that's clearly there for the sake of something later, right? It's like information that they're either reiterating for the reader or just a little bit more character stuff. So, I mean, generally I don't really have any complaints about this book other than that.
Yeah. Ashley, was there anything that you found lacking or that you didn't like about this book?
Not necessarily lacking, but like there are definitely a lot of things that are upsetting, but they are upsetting by design. I think the scene where the Lees are moving into their new house and Mr. Lee's colleagues come to welcome them and they bring some treats and then joke about it not being dogs. So they hope they'll still like it's not even that that's like a pejorative, but just like the implication and the deep seated you know, hatred, but like that makes me like clutch my white lady pearls and be very, very uncomfortable. But that's
well, but then also
the
aren't
point,
they...
and that's the subject matter that we're tackling. So,
right.
But aren't those people that he's working with also like the clan, the leader of the scorpion dude is the guy that comes and greets him at the door.
Yes. And they're, you know, they're funding the Nazi superhero up yeah. and at them, whatever his name is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 So, yeah. So what is the bottom line then, Ashley? Is this a buy it, skip it, borrow it? What's the deal on this?
So a few weeks ago on Geek History Lesson, we did an episode called Best Superman Stories. Mm-hmm. And two of the three people put this on their list. So I am like, buy this in a rush out in a buying frenzy, as Matthew would say, buy it now, buy three copies, give it to your friends, give it to your children, give it to your grandma. I think this book is very special.
Yeah, I would agree with you. This is a fantastic book. This is definitely a book I think everybody should have. Everybody should read. Yeah, I know we're talking about, we are not even going, I think we're just kind of skimming the surface mm-hmm. on a lot of the stuff that goes on in this book. But I think you get the idea that, you know, Superman is there to beat up and save the day and come to grips with his identity and expand upon stories that have been told before in this. So I think this is really a book that earns all the awards that it's been given and deserves many, many, many more awards. And I think it's one that is deserving to be on your bookshelf. Matthew.
Golden Age Superman was a hard case socialist who dragged a guy up and hung him off the side of the building for being a corrupt landlord. And I miss that in my Superman. And while this is not that, there's enough of that here and enough, you know, loving tributes to things like the Fleischer serials and the Kirk Allen serial, you know, ties to the actual bits of continuity. So, you know, if you're a fan of something like the Chronological Superman, you'll look at this and go, hey, this is neat. If you're not, if you're just a casual Superman fan, this is a great story. If this was your first comic book, I feel like this would be a great introduction.
Yeah, just I agree with
construction level, just to, you know, sitting down and reading a complete story. If you get this trade and give it to somebody as their first comic book, I feel like you're going to have another nerd on your hands. And
yeah, most definitely.
This is a rush right out into buying frenzy. Buy two, buy three, buy one for Ashley, buy one for Matthew. Mm-hmm. We'll give them to our friends.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll give them to two friends and everyone will, you know, give them friends and then we'll all have cool Superman.
Rodrigo, you get the final word on this book this week.
There's a lot in this book that speaks very earnestly to the sort of immigrant condition in the United States. And just kind of works his best to not only portray it honestly, say with like Roberta interacting with like other Chinese people or with Roberta and her brother not seeing eye to eye about how to like basically perform their Chinese-ness in front of their friends. But also does something that's like very admirable, which is that by assigning Superman as an immigrant puts it in terms that like a white dude might understand.
Mm-hmm.
Which is God's work. So I would say I would venture another pick this up in a buying frenzy. Oh, wow. And you know, show it to your dad.
There you go. All right. Thank you, Rodrigo and Ashley and Matthew. And thank you, dear listener, for being part of the Major Spoilers experience this week. That's where we're gonna wrap it up this issue.
As always, we love your feedback, unless it's about me speaking high school Spanish in front of a native Spanish speaker. I have enough stories about that myself, but use the comment section at Major Spoilers to share your thoughts and reactions to this show, this comic, and this episode.
Or even better, you can send us an email to podcast@majorspoilers.com.
And don't forget, you can support this show and everything we do by becoming a patron at patreon.com/majorspoilers.
And we're going to be back next week. General topic, which means all these people better bone up on their trivia. You know why? Because we know that you love comics and we do too. And we will talk with you soon.
Fat Dick's Ray Vision of Superman. I could save a few bucks and stand around and read through the covers of the comics on the stand. But although every other page would be backwards, I suppose, I could still read the evens and the odds. Well, I don't know. Guess I haven't thought this all the way through. Plus, as soon as the comic bookstore guy knew, he kicked my butt out on the corner. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Think about a better way. If I was hulking green or gray, I could just bust through that brick wall, take their comic books away. But then the little meat would deal with all the tanks and bombs and guns. Have you ever tried to read a series with all that going on? Guess I need to rethink this plan. How would I back and board my comics with such huge hands? Guess I already told ya. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. If I'm Star Raven rich like a man of iron, I might not be surprised if I'm that I might actually have the heart cold to follow an entire storyline. But would I really even need to read up on all those escapades? I mean, who needs such distractions when your sister's such a babe? But the downside is such a beast. Being shot up in a fun, being in the Middle East with a King Santo and soldier. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What a major spoiler. Whoa, 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 whoa. What a major spoiler.
This podcast is copyright 2021 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller. Find your next obsession. Or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first three audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.